Joining us right now, live in studio, he's launching a brand new football league, the Freedom Football League, former NFL player, New Orleans Saints, Miami Dolphins, Baltimore Ravens, had a great college career, won a Heisman.
Yeah.
Ricky Williams. Ricky, how are you?
Hi, Ricky.
I'm great, yeah.
Ricky, it's good seeing you, man.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. So tell us, before we get into a little bit your career, because you had a very interesting career, there's no doubt about that. Very interesting.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about the league that you were promoting here right now. You're going to be an owner in this league?
I'm going to be one of the owners of the league, yes.
Okay, of the league itself.
Of the league, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the founders. And I mean, we'll start with the ownership structure. So part of the league part of the teams will be owned by the players. Part of the teams will be owned by the fans. Part of the teams will be owned by the operator. And so we're really trying to disrupt professional sports in the way it's done right now and bring fans more into the fold and really make this league a player-centric and fan-centric league.
I see.
If I own a part of a team as a fan, I'm going to want to fire coaches. I'm going to want to make some decisions.
That's true.
Exactly. I mean, we even talked about, and I'm not sure if this is going to make it through, but an idea that I had is because if you're one of the players, the fans that have season tickets, and you're one of the owners, on all fourth downs, you know, on your phone, you have the ability to say, are we going to go for it?
Really?
Or are we going to kick?
Wow.
Because I think that helps the coaches, too. It takes the pressure off the coaches.
Yeah,
and
just
the fans,
blame the fans.
And the fans can't. Exactly.
Wow. It was those idiots in the second row. They're the ones who wanted me to go for it.
Wow.
Yeah. Or else I would have done something different. I like that.
Yeah, but this league, like myself, is founded by former players. And so we're taking, you know, the collective of our experiences and using it to create something that we feel is going to be superior to anything out there.
Do you look at it? I'm sorry, Joe, but do you look at it as competition to the other two leagues that are starting, the XFL and then the whatever it is?
Right. It will be competition because we're competing for a similar pool of players and also fans. But we look at this as being more than a league; that it is a movement, you know. And our goal is to empower, not to exploit, and really again the guts of this league are the ups and downs, the experiences from former players, and our sense of how things could have been better for us on the field and off the field. Mm.
Now, you said you're one of the owners of the league. Other former players are owners as well?
Yeah, right now there's about 100 stakeholders, and about half of them, about 50 former players right now. And we're inviting more former players because we think what's going to make this special is the collective experiences of former players and that have been through this process.
Got some names, some of the names.
So T.O., Hall of Famer,
right?
We have Simeon Rice,
right?
Down with our Orlando Jeff Blake,
right?
Who's
the quarterback?
The quarterback is going to be part of the San Antonio team. Who else? Jeff Garcia,
right? Right.
In the Oakland area, to name a few players. And if you go on our website, freedomfootball.co, you'll see a list of the other guys that are involved in the league.
Now, which is the team that you're most involved with, or is it not just the whole league itself?
Well, for me, the whole league itself. I mean, my role in the league is going to be director of wellness.
I see.
And that's another thing. So since I've retired, and even before I retired, the bent of my life has really been about healing myself and also learning healing modalities. You know, I studied different alternative healing. And so bringing all of our experiences, both on the field, but what we've been doing since retirement, bringing all those to the fore as we develop and create this league.
Mm. In states where it's allowed, no marijuana testing, correct?
Well, I mean, if someone can show me a good reason to do it,
I'm with you, man.
If we can find a good reason to do it, we will. But the whole point of this league is not just doing things that have been done in the past because they've been done in the past, but to take a fresh look at how we can create a current, modern, professional sports league that works for everyone.
Here's a great thing that I think would be tremendous for your league.
Yes.
Okay. You only have two officials on a field all the time because the NFL is so freaking over-officiated. These guys are so bad. I mean, and they have so much control over who wins these games, Ricky. It's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
The less officials you got on the field, the better.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great example, right? we can look at what's going on right now and see what's working and see what's not and take the things that are working and really incorporate that into what we're doing and see the things that aren't working and come up with creative solutions to how we can do this different.
Mm. Well, it's interesting because for a guy like Joe, he laid it out. The thing that probably bothers you the most
about
modern day football is the officiating.
Oh, God.
As a guy that's played it, as a guy that I'm sure still watches it, knows about it, What's the number one thing that bothers you about modern football that you would change in this new league?
So I'm from a player's perspective, sure. it's the way that injuries are handled. You know, I find for me the most stressful, difficult thing to deal with is playing injured. You know, and so I think that's something we're going to take into consideration to make sure that players' health and wellness is a priority. That that if they're able to play, yeah, we need them on the field. But if they're not, to take the pressure off to help them push their to make them push their bodies beyond where they're actually capable of going. Because a big part of this league is setting players up for the rest of their lives. Right. You know, to take their talent and ability on the field and turn that into something that can be useful. You see, so many players, they're great athletes. But when they're done playing football, they don't have anything else. And if they haven't taken care of their money, they're in a worse place than they would have been otherwise. And so, again, looking at things that aren't great about the game and the player's experience, and seeing what we can do to improve them.
Mm. Now, does that mean that you, when we're talking to Ricky Williams, does that mean that you and I understand the safety aspect of it, does that mean that there would be less hitting in the league? I mean, how about that? I mean, already they're trying to curb that kind of thing in the NFL. What about that aspect of it, Ricky?
So when we've talked, we're former players, and we don't like the idea of less hitting, but we like more care after the hitting.
Right.
Right? Putting a greater emphasis on what you do after the game to take care of yourself and to recover so that when you come back. Because right now, recovery is the doctor gives you some pills. That's from the team's perspective. Recovery is pills from the doctor. That's it. And so we want to, you know, and if you want to see a chiropractor, a massage therapist, or an osteopath or an acupuncturist, you have to do it on your own. And we want to provide these resources for the players, and at least introduce it to them so they have more ability to take care of themselves.
How are you physically after spending those years in the NFL? I think you had a year in the CFL. Obviously took plenty of hits over the course of your career.
Yeah.
You look good, but how do you feel? You feel good?
I feel wonderful, and I think I'm a walking, breathing, living example of what this league can produce with their football players. And again, I've spent a lot of resources, time, money taking care of my body and learning how to recover from what I did to my body. And you guys saw me play. You saw the way that I ran. And if someone who can take as many hits and deliver as many hits as I have and still feel good at, you know, plus 40, I think I'm a good example of what football players can have post career.
Mm. You know, you had such a, and again, I'm talking to Ricky Williams, you had such an interesting career. I mean, you know, you win the Heisman Trophy at Texas, you know, and I guess the comparison, I always like would think of you as like Earl Campbell, because he was another, you know, Texas guy, won the Heisman, big physical runner, that kind of guy, speed and power, and that's really, you know, what you were all about. And then you go, well, what were your thoughts when Mike Ditka trades his entire draft to get you in the first round with the Saints? Well, what were you thinking at that point?
At the moment, I was still reeling from not being the first pick, from not being the second pick, from not being the third pick, from not being the fourth pick.
What was the number you got taken again?
Five.
You were five.
And I wasn't even the first running back. So I was still reeling from, you know, it was a hit to my ego that
who was taken in front of you as a running back?
Edgerrin James.
Edgerrin James,
yes.
Okay.
It turned out to be a good pick for the Colts. I mean, I think I probably would have done more with Peyton Manning as my quarterback, but it's still a great pick, and he'll probably be in the Hall of Fame. Over 10,000 yards rushing. Great career by Edgerrin James. But when it happened, I think I was still in shock. It didn't really hit me until later. What he actually did. And people ask me often if I felt the pressure. But when I say I put so much pressure on myself, it didn't really matter the external pressure. And I feel very blessed to have had the opportunity to play for Coach Ditka for a year, because players coach, football mind, tough guy, great leader. I mean, again, it was a great experience. We had a rough year. We were 3-13, and he was fired after.
Right.
But I was hurt, you know, a lot of the year. But still, a great experience for me.
And I remember you were drafted by the Phillies, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I was
drafted eighth round at a high school, and I actually played.
Right.
Spent the summers in college playing minor league baseball.
What was your first love, football or baseball?
Oh, baseball. It was no question.
Really?
Yeah. My dream as a kid was to be the next Tony Gwynn. You know, I grew up in San Diego.
Right.
And I loved baseball. About 13, I watched a Notre Dame football game, and I fell in love with college football. And so my dream was, you know, similar to Kyler Murray, to be right.
I was thinking of him because he's a college
football great, and then play baseball.
What would you do if you're him right now? Because he's been drafted. I think he was a first round pick, huge signing bonus. Yeah. Boris is his agent. He's made it.
Yeah,
and now he's had a Heisman year, and there's talk. Well, maybe he'll be a first round pick in the NFL. If you're him, what advice would you give him?
I don't know his heart, but I would say, you know, listen to your heart. But you know, baseball careers tend to last longer. You tend to make more money.
Guaranteed money, too.
Yeah. But the downside of what I learned about baseball is you got to really love baseball, because to play every day for 5 months, you know, it's a grind. Football, you know, it's a grind and you beat up your body, but the longer off season is nice.
Sure.
Yeah. No question about that. Again, we're talking to Ricky Williams. So you're from San Diego. You wind up going to Austin, Texas to go to school.
Yep.
Why did you go there?
So, like I said, I watched Notre Dame, fell in love. For me, the only point of playing college football was to have the full college football experience. And so when I went on my recruiting trips, I had a certain list of things that I wanted. And first was a rich tradition.
Right.
You know, which comes along with being on national television, because I wanted the world to see me play college football. I wanted to start as a freshman, you know, that – if I wanted to get the full 4 years of experience, and I wanted to find a team that was kind of on the brink of being back, so I could be a part of like that missing piece to bring the team back.
And
took my recruiting trip to Texas, and I checked all the boxes, and it just felt right.
Mm.
What was the transition like? You traded to the Dolphins. I think they gave up a lot for you too.
Two first round picks.
I bet. What was that transition like?
That was amazing. You know, it had gotten to the point where my second year in New Orleans, they drafted Deuce McAllister in the first round. And you talk to any professional athlete, when they draft a first rounder at your position, you know, the writing is on the wall. And so I could tell that I needed a change, and I got traded to Miami. And at the time, my best friend, Dan Levitard, was in Miami. And so I got a chance to reunite with Dan and go to a team that had a rich winning tradition, a great defense, and they needed a running back. And so it just was a perfect fit for me. I mean, obviously, I ended up leading the NFL in rushing and going to the Pro Bowl. So it was a great move. And, you know, New Orleans is a great town. So is Miami, Florida.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm in with Miami.
Both cities at night are pretty fun. Yeah. I can tell you that right now.
I'm just talking about the overall weather situation.
Oh, that aspect.
Compared to this.
Well, this is brutal. I mean, you know, please. You can't get worse than here. Well, yeah. I guess you could, but it's up there.
Yeah.
You know? Again, we're talking to Ricky Williams. Yeah, I was telling you this before. You know, I'm a Jet fan for 54 years. You can see the scars on my body, Ricky. And I tell you right now, boy, you know, you're a good guy. There's no doubt. You know, looking back, but boy, when the Jets would play you, man, oh, this guy. You know,
I used to love playing against the Jets, especially coming up here to play.
right.
You know, it's the best. I love Jets fans. You know, honestly, I'd walk on the field and I'd see the signs and hear what they were saying to me, and I couldn't help but smile and laugh.
Yeah, you know?
At least we were good natured together.
Right. Yeah. Like, great respect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think of you and Ronnie Brown in that Wildcat formation because it really took the league by storm when it was executed, and you guys did it for a while, and you did it better than anybody else. It was often imitated. The Jets imitated a lot, but you guys executed that beautifully.
Yeah, people don't realize, you know, so most football, all football teams, before practice, we have a half an hour walkthrough. We would devote our whole half an hour walkthrough to working on Wildcat plays. And so I think we just spent more time doing it and made it a staple of our offense. And that's why we were so good at it.
Were you surprised it was as effective as it was for that period of time?
I was. I remember we were in training camp, and Coach David Lee, who had run the Wildcat at Arkansas the year before with Felix Jones and Darren McFadden, he put it on the board, and we were like, we're not running this high school crap, you know? But after losing two games, you know, we started the season 0-2, and we were more receptive to it. And Coach Brown decided to install it against the Patriots, and we got behind it. And it was such a big splash. We went up to Foxborough and whooped up on the Patriots.
Yeah,
and after that, it was a staple of our offense. And it was fun for us because it gave Ronnie and myself a chance to both be on the field at the same time. And we had four running backs actually in that formation. And so it really, you know, boosted morale for the running back room.
Right, tell us, like I said, you had, I guess you were suspended. And initially you were suspended, I guess, for marijuana, right? Wasn't that initially what happened to you?
Well, I was going to be suspended for four games,
right,
and have to deal with that. And for me, I was already thinking about I'm not sure football is for me right now.
Right,
and so that
right.
was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And I said, I'm just going to retire right now.
And you said you stayed away for 2 years.
I stayed away for 1 year. I came back because, you know, it was when the Dolphins were threatening to sue me for
$8
million.
Right. I remember that. Yes.
And so I said, yeah, okay, maybe I'll come back.
But then you got suspended.
And then I got
missed
suspended.
A year, right?
Yes. Then I came back. Then I got suspended and missed a year. And that's when I played up in Toronto for the Argonauts.
Right.
So if there was no 4-game suspension, you were still seriously considering retiring anyway.
Yes.
What do you think you would have done if there was no 4-game suspension?
I think I would have played and probably got hurt that year.
Because your heart wasn't into it, you think?
Because my heart wasn't into it and because just what was going on in the organization. Norv Turner was the offensive coordinator my first 2 years in Miami, and he's probably one of the most brilliant offensive minds in football. And he took the head coaching job at Oakland, and there was a whole bunch of infighting in the Dolphins offensive staff, and they ended up promoting a tight ends coach who had never been an offensive coordinator to become offensive coordinator. We didn't make any moves at the quarterback position, and Coach Wannstedt is all about protecting the defense by running the ball. And so I could see the writing on the wall.
Right.
You know?
Was there any thought to asking the Dolphins to trade you as opposed to retiring?
No, I'm kind of traditional in that once I commit to a team, I stay committed. Another part of this was we were in contract negotiations.
Okay.
And my attitude was if you're going to give me the ball 400 times a year, you know, that's putting my future at risk. I should be compensated for that. And they weren't willing to. They didn't have the same
right.
viewpoint. And so for me, I was just looking at, is this worth it? Is it worth it to me?
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And so I said, I'm going to do something different.
Now, I was asking you this before, too, and you said, I asked you if you had tour because with Lenny Kravitz, and you did, right?
Yeah.
You said for a year.
It was
for a month.
It was actually this time, right? And that was part of it, you know? So at my heart, I'm an adventurer, and I love to travel. And so we had that time off between the off season and training camp, about a month and a half. And I got a call from a good friend of mine who was Lenny Kravitz's personal assistant. And she said, hey, you know, you're off. Why don't you come hang out with us? And in my mind, I was like, I can't. The football season's coming up. And then I thought about it, and I was like, yes, I can. And so I hopped on a plane, and that experience really pushed me closer to retirement, realizing this feels much better to me than going back and playing football. And I had enough money where I didn't have to play football anymore,
right.
and I could start making choices based on what made me mm-hmm. happy. And it just was a confluence of factors that just made retiring make more sense than not retiring.
And did you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and you didn't miss it when you were away, right?
It was the opposite. I mean, I didn't miss my body hurting every day. And it actually gave me a year for my body to heal. Because in
right.
that year off, I started learning about, again, Ayurveda, alternative health. I became a yoga instructor. And I just started doing things to take care of my body. So when I did come back, because I came back and I played another 5-6
yeah.
seasons.
Yeah, you did. You played for a while, right?
And I felt better. I'm telling you, I felt better at the end of my career than I did at 27 years old. And so I look at that year off, and I think it saved my football career and allowed me to reach 10,000 yards and still
right,
be
right.
able to walk
right.
after.
No,
so what made you decide to come back then? It sounds like you're having a good time. You're doing all this fun stuff. You've got the money. You're healthy. What made you say, you know what? I miss football.
So when I was, it wasn't that I missed football. It was that I realized in order for my life to get back on track, I had to come back and write the way that I left. Because the way I left, it was controversy. And I thought anything I do the rest of my life, I'm going to be tagged with this guy that just quit to smoke weed. And so in order to get my life back on track, I have to go back and make things right.
But did that have a big influence, by the way? I mean, jokes aside, were you thinking, you know what, I do want to smoke weed. I can't do it while I'm playing in the NFL, so this is an added bonus to not playing football. I can do it, and
it was an added bonus, but it wasn't something that was that much. The fact of dealing with the fallout of failing the test, I didn't want to have to deal with that. But, you know, I had already been in the drug program for 2 years and you know, managed fine, so I'd already
right.
come to terms with the fact that, you know, that I was in the drug program, but it was an added bonus that I,
sure.
and it was just the general freedom, right, of being able to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted to do. And I guess at that point in my life, I felt like I had earned it.
What percentage of guys, and obviously I don't want to hear, you don't have to give me names, obviously,
yeah.
but what percentage of guys in the NFL when you were playing, even now, are smoking weed consistently?
I'd say it'd be a fair statement and accurate to say it's over 50%.
Okay.
You know, but okay, I'll say it like this. I'd say it's probably a little bit higher than the general average.
Right. Okay.
In that age range.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And a part of it is because culturally, right? Most African Americans grew up, and there's someone in the family that smoked, and it wasn't a big deal.
Right. Right. Yeah. No.
We're moving to a time where it's going to be legal, and
it's legal in a lot of states.
Yeah, we're already getting there.
Right.
I mean, it's funny now because again, when that happened, it was a big controversy. Now I get calls from ESPN to come on air and talk about it.
Right.
Things have really changed.
Oh, it's a different world.
Yeah.
When you initially retired, did you think in your brain at that moment, I'm never playing football again? And in the back of your mind, you think, you know what, maybe I will come back. You never know down the
Honestly,
road.
Honestly, I was thinking, I got to the point where I was thinking I was never even going to come back to the United States.
Oh, wow.
Where were you living at that point?
I was in Australia.
You were in Australia?
I was in Australia traveling around, and I found this beautiful 35-acre plot of land.
Not
and
bad.
I started, I could just stay here and grow vegetables and invite my friends and just, you know, live the rest of my life like this. And so I really got to the point where I was thinking I was never coming back. A matter of fact, when I was traveling, I was reached out to by different media outlets and said, we want to interview you. And I said, you know, I'm not a football player anymore. I'm just a regular guy. If you want to come hang out, here's where I am. But I'm not a football player. So I tried to move as far away from football as I possibly could.
Do you watch football now or no?
I don't. I cover the Longhorns for ESPN, for Longhorn Network.
Oh, okay.
And so I definitely watch Texas football.
Right.
NFL, if a game is on, I can't help but be engaged in it because it's part of my blood. You know, I can't take football out of me. It's part of my who I am. But I won't go out of my way to watch a game just because I'm so busy doing other things.
Where do you live now, Ricky?
I live in Los Angeles.
You live in LA. Okay. Yeah.
So this league is very exciting. When's it going to launch? 2020?
2020, yep. Yeah.
And how many teams to start?
10 teams.
And all in places that don't have major league franchises now.
Well, Oakland has one now, but they're going to Vegas.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But you mentioned St. Louis, which had one. San Diego. San Diego, right.
Yeah, Oklahoma City.
Right. And you said Hartford is the closest to New York.
Hartford, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We wanted to put some football up in New England. And the other thing about it is we wanted to create community around. So in our draft, we're going to prioritize local players from the region.
Oh, okay.
I see what you mean.
And that helps because I think people like seeing guys from their area that they can root for.
They used to have that in the NBA, the geographical draft choices old days.
Really?
Oh, the NBA?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, back like in the early – I'm an old man, Ricky. Back in the early 60s, they had that.
Yeah, I'm gonna do some research on that because, that's a big part of our league is creating community.
Sure.
Yeah.
Any TV deal or streaming deal so people can watch the games?
That's another part we're excited about expanding on because, you know, we're not tied to the old model of the big, you know, TV deals that there's streaming and so many other options out there that our media team has really been on top of that.
Mm. Well, very cool.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, give me one game that you look back on in your career and you say, man, that's the best game I had or the best moments I had playing in the NFL.
I would say in 2002, my first year in Miami, we went to Buffalo, played in the blizzard. I had over 200 yards. We lost, but 200-yard game in the NFL is a big deal. And then the following week, we played on Monday Night Football against the Bears. And I went for 216. And just, I think, running for 200 yards on Monday Night Football.
Right. Against, back-to-back weeks, no less.
Yeah, it was probably the high point of my NFL career.
And your last year in the NFL was 2011 with the Ravens, which means your last game in the NFL was that disastrous AFC Championship game.
In New England, in Foxborough.
Not only the kick, the drop.
The drop. Yeah. Not a lot of people remember the drop.
Well, I remember the drop.
Yeah. Wasn't it Dennis Northcutt that dropped the ball?
No, it
was. Who was it that dropped it?
Yeah, I don't remember. Who was it?
It was.
Who's the guy?
He played for the Bills. Lee Evans.
Was that who it was? That dropped it?
Yes.
Wow. That was brutal, man.
Should have won that game.
We should have won that. And we'd gone to the Super Bowl, too.
Against the Giants.
Yeah.
And then next year they did. Next year, the following year, they beat them in Foxborough and did go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and did go to the Super Bowl.
And won it.
Yeah,
well,
so close.
We did all right with that, Joe. We made some money off that one.
Well, we did make money off that.
That was a good one.
We had the Ravens at a good number going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So we won a little, you know.
Honestly, when I retired, I knew the Ravens were going to win the Super Bowl the next year. just being in that organization, you know, it's like every year they were getting closer and closer and closer. And there's. And you asked about John Harbaugh, just a great leader of men, you know. And again, we had a lot of veteran leadership with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed,
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, Haloti Ngata. I mean, just a lot of leaders on that team.
Yeah,
we're thinking of John Harbaugh just in case he gets fired as Jets.
With the Jets,
take him as a coach.
We'll take him in a nanosecond.
Yeah, and he's Good coach, good man. Yeah. Really good man.
No doubt.
Congrats on the new league, Ricky. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Ricky, you're a pleasure to talk to, man.
Thank you.
You're a very engaging dude. There's no doubt about that.
I had a good time. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.